So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
It's our weekly marriage hour here on Trending every Thursday. If you know someone who's married, wants to be married, is discerning marriage, pondering engagement, has been married 30 years, this is the hour for you. We're going to be discussing today what was trending on Twitter yesterday. Thanks, birth control, celebrating the landmark day of birth control. And for some people, what they believe is its wonderful existence in this world. But we're going to talk about birth control, three reasons why you shouldn't take birth control. We're also going to talk about birth control's impact on marriage. We're going to unpack today, everything in today's show really does kind of cohesively come together. We'll talk about theology of the body for marriage, and I think it really helps us to see the solution, the goodness behind fruitful marital love that is free from birth control as well. We're going to talk about cohabitating. Trends have shown that cohabitation over the last number of years has been on the rise. What's the big deal? We're just moving in together. Maybe you have kids who have moved in together. Maybe you've even considered it yourself. You're listening to Trending with Timory here during our weekly marriage hour. I'd actually love to hear from you. If you moved in with someone before getting married to them, like to hear your experience. The number is 1-888-914-9149. How did that go for you? We'll talk about cohabitating. Maybe you're trying to talk to a friend or a child about why they shouldn't move in together. We'll give you some answers as to why that should be reconsidered as not the best thing for your relationship, and not just using faith-filled arguments. Faith-filled arguments are so important. But unfortunately, often when people are moving in with each other, that's the last thing they want to hear. And the science and the psychology can be helpful, if anything, often will help persuade them. We're going to talk about building the domestic church and what helps us in our marriages to move forward and continue to build up our homes. You're listening to Trending with Timory during our weekly marriage hour. If you'd like to join the conversation, number's 1-888-914-9149. You can always follow me on Instagram and share your thoughts and questions live. Follow me at Timory, T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. Okay, so trending on Twitter was hashtag thanks birth control. And just to be clear, thanks THX, because apparently none of us know how to spell anymore because of our use of social media. But, you know, I do appreciate it. I understood what this hashtag meant because THX, like, that fits thanks. But sometimes some people will text me and they will use these abbreviations for words that are so-called text slang. In fact, my grandmother, when she used to text me, would send me these like abbreviations. I had no idea what she was saying. It must be like shorthand. I still don't understand shorthand. Do you know shorthand? Okay, I don't know how to read it. I don't understand it. Anyways, so thanks birth control was trending on Twitter, marking this historic date, marking that we have had birth control and we continue to have birth control. Now, I want to touch on three reasons not to take birth control. And there are many reasons. But first and foremost, from a medical perspective, we have so much information today about why we should not be taking birth control. From everything from what people like to think are scare tactics but isn't, the abortion and birth control link. In fact, and people will say, well, you can't just say that because birth control and breast cancer were on the rise at the same time in terms of youth and women being diagnosed with breast cancer, you can't say they're connected. They actually are. In fact, it's a sound science, if you look at it, between how the breast tissue develops in the woman, the lobules, the types of breast tissue, those that are cancer resistant and those that aren't. It's really simple. And we're just coming out of Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and I'll just briefly remind us, you know, what that connection is. The lobules, the tissue in a woman's chest change when she's pregnant, especially as the body changes to be able to further nurture and care for the baby. And those breast tissues go from a smaller number of breast tissue that are cancer vulnerable to a larger quantity of breast tissues that are cancer resistant by the end of the pregnancy. Well, this is why women's chests often get get larger when they're pregnant because all of this breast tissue is developing and changing and growing. Well, in the earlier parts of a pregnancy, that breast tissue, there's a lot of it. It's called a type 1, type 2 lobule, and those are very cancer vulnerable. If you stop a pregnancy in the middle, well, then those breast tissues do not continue to develop to be cancer resistant, which is why abortion also is a link to breast cancer. It's a cause of breast cancer. Well, what happens with birth control is the body's in a state of pseudo-pregnancy. And so the body starts to develop these breast tissues like a woman who's pregnant because the body thinks it's pregnant. It's being tricked into thinking this. It's replicating pregnancy so that the body can't get pregnant. Well, all these tissues are developing, but they're not going through a full pregnancy, a full-term pregnancy. And so what's happening is those tissues then aren't developing as they're meant to become cancer resistant. They're left in high quantities. They're cancer vulnerable. That's just one of the many medical reasons why people shouldn't take birth control. Now, if you already have a predisposition, a genetic mutation, or anything that leads you to a higher risk for breast cancer, this can be a death sentence for many women, and that number astronomically goes up as soon as she starts taking hormonal birth control. That's one of the many reasons why and it's not just breast cancer. We're seeing increase in all sorts of forms of cancer as a result of hormonal contraception. Well, why? I just explained the breast cancer link, but we're also not talking about the fact that the two main components are synthetic forms of estrogen and progesterone that are in the pill. That's significant because these are known as group 1 carcinogens, recognized worldwide. Those are cancer-causing agents. I've known people in their early 20s, barely touching 20, barely coming out of their teens, barely starting their adult life, who have had terrible diagnoses with cancer. And the link, the result, the best guess is doctors have told them, look, it's not popular to say this, but I see on your chart you've been taking birth control for 6-7 years since you were 13. That's one of the main reasons not to take it. That impacts marriage. That impacts the day-to-day. That impacts women. And as women, we deserve better than bad medical care in the name of so-called fake, because it is fake, feminism. That's one of the reasons not to take birth control. My second reason to not take birth control is the interpersonal dimension. And I think that this is so important, especially as we come to the topic of marriage during our weekly marriage here. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio. Hi, I'm Timory. And the interpersonal dimension of the impact of taking birth control is one that many people discover. I'll start with a simple example. When working with young men, I've often spoken to them where they've said, yeah, you know, my girlfriend's on birth control. Well, she wasn't on it. And said, well, why? I say, well, she's in bad moods. She's not the same. She acts different. I'd rather she not be on it. The reason for them not wanting her to be on birth control isn't the so-called benefit or not benefit of potentially being able to have a child or not. It's actually having to do with how she acts. Men recognize if they've been dating someone and they then go on to birth control, if they're married to someone, that there's a change in how she interacts. Her hormones are completely being thrown out of whack. We as women already are a different chemical makeup every single day. That's how our hormones function. But even more so, that chemical function, the hormone function, is being totally thrown off. That throws you off in terms of mood and interaction. It impacts what's known as pheromones, of how men and women relate and are interested and take interest in one another to potentially start a family, have a family, and be interested in physical intimacy. So those are some of the dimensions that are so important. But also what happens when we allow birth control to be a part of our relationships, a part of our marriages, is that it starts to allow this perspective of use when it comes to the other person. Yes, you can love someone, but we can also love someone imperfectly. And we can use them. And you might say, well, you know, we don't always have a baby every time you engage in intimacy. Yes, that's true. Does that mean you're using the other person those times? No, because you're open to life and you're not creating a physical, mental, or emotional barrier. There's not fear and resentment and anxiety in the marital act when it's free of birth control. So birth control really does change the interpersonal dynamic of relationships. It leads people to use one another, to be used by another. It leads us to degrade and take advantage of other people. I've shared the story with you many times before, and it's worth noting just again for a moment here. I'll never forget being in the crisis pregnancy center counseling room one time with a young woman who had chosen life for her baby and now was getting ready to marry the baby's father. And I was supposed to talk to her about future children, natural family planning. And when I sat down with her, I remember sitting there and we started to talk about people she had known who had taken hormonal contraception. I asked, how did that impact the relationship? And she talked about how her sister had started taking it years into her marriage and how the husband started to degrade her. Even the way the family would see him speak to her, that this barrier that wasn't even a physical barrier, but a chemical barrier in the body. A chemical dysfunction in the body, because that's what birth control is. It's leading the body to dysfunction, to not function as it's supposed to. That barrier, as simple as it may seem, as a couple pills, an IUD, or whatever it might be, was leading to this perspective that intimacy is about me and my desire only. Not about a self-gift and not about a self-gift that could become a child. And it was so significant. This young woman hadn't really thought about it, but knew the connection. I never want to take birth control. I see what it's done. And she started to think and ponder and analyze other people and other relationships she's seen damaged by the use of hormonal contraception. So as people are saying hashtag thanks birth control on trending over the last 24 hours, I think that it's important for us to understand the interpersonal impact of hormonal contraception. The third reason that I would like to talk about why you should not take birth control is because this full understanding of what marriage is, what intimacy is, has to do with this idea of uniting the spouses and bringing forth children. This is fundamental to what the church teaches. You don't have to be Catholic to hear this or listen to it or talk about it. The idea is that every intimate act is meant to be unitive and procreative. And hormonal birth control prevents both the unitive and the procreative dimension. It prevents the full physical union and the full spiritual compatibility and psychological compatibility in terms of what intimacy is. That you're fully entering into it. You can't enter into what actual intimacy is if you're not doing it right. What we have out there today is a cheap, watered-down intimacy. People are hungry for more. I think that's why there's this obsession. Even if you look at the pornography addiction, people who are married are looking for more. It's because we have cheap sex today. We've downgraded what it is. We've missed the full physical, spiritual, mental, emotional, psychological, all of the dimensions of intimacy. And this unitive approach that the church says every intimate act is meant to have has been lost, as has the procreative dimension where we're open to life. And we're going to talk more about the beauty of children here on the show. If you're just joining us, you're listening to Trending with Timory here on Relevant Radio. Let's talk, though. It's our weekly marriage hour. What about the impact of birth control on marriage? Well, it's a lie with our body at the end of the day. It's not how God created intimacy to be, as we've been talking about. You know, it's so funny, coming from Southern California, there's such a strong move toward organic, clean eating, pure ingredients, that you look at a label and you know what every single item on that label is. You can pronounce it, and there's maybe no more than 5 or 10 ingredients. You know what they are. This move toward organic, hormone-free, grass-fed, grass-finished, free-range. Well, why don't we have this approach when it comes to the most intimate and important things that we do with our body? Why don't we choose the organic and intentional and purest form of what intimacy is meant to be? That's healthy. That's integrative. That includes the whole person. Body, mind, spirit. It touches on the interpersonal. As I was looking through the hashtag thanks birth control as it was trending on Twitter over the last 24 hours, I kept thinking about how birth control has truly thwarted motherhood and fatherhood. And I think that this is one of the largest impacts that birth control has had in many ways on married people. I was looking through Twitter and there were all these people, you know, doing their hashtag thanks birth control and talking about being a dog mom or a cat mom and how having birth control is what allowed them to be a dog mom or a cat mom because they wouldn't have had time otherwise. They would have been distracted. One person, Samantha Berg on Twitter said, I heart, because again, we use our abbreviation today, I heart my IUD because I can barely take care of two plants, let alone a baby. Are you kidding me? Paired a baby and a plant? Oh, wait, sorry, I got it wrong. She compared two plants to one baby. Should I love my IUD because I can barely take care of two plants, let alone a baby? Hashtag thanks birth control. Okay, let's talk for just a moment about the differences between a plant and a baby. And you may think this is ridiculous, but it's not actually. There's a reason why people are hashtagging dog mom, cat mom, plant raiser, mother, mother earth, whatever you want to call yourself. A baby is has a rational soul. It's someone who can be loved and loved. A plant has a different type of soul, a nutritive soul. So a plant does actually have a soul. Have you ever thought about that? But a different type of soul, the way it functions. It can grow. It can even reproduce, not in the same way that we do. We know this about plants. But if you think about it, it exists there. It is simply growing and reproducing. It continues to function. This is part of what was different about Adam in the garden when he realized in the second creation account, Genesis chapter 2, Adam's alone in the garden. And what does he say? He's alone. God says, it is not good that you can be alone. Adam was looking around at all of creation. He's seen it grows, it reproduces. But I'm different from all of the rest of creation. All of creation is there existing, but it's not capable of loving. It's not capable of having that intellectual thought, that rationale. Think about the difference between something that has a different type of soul. A nutritive soul or soul that can even be in motion, such as an animal, locomotive. You have these perspectives. Let's think about a sponge and a starfish for a second that has a totally different type of soul from a baby. A sponge, or let's start with a starfish. A starfish, if you chop off one of its star corners, we'll call it a leg. If you chop off one of those corners, one of the legs of the starfish, guess what? A new starfish grows. If you chop off a piece of a sponge, a new sponge grows and develops. But if you and I chop off, for example, a pinky, a toe, an arm, a new Timory does not grow. A new you does not grow. A new baby of mine does not grow. But you see, I think we've lost perspective from the difference between a living nutritive soul as a plant or even animals and a baby. And it's so important that we see that. But you know, I think there's a reason why people are literally in this hashtag thanks birth control comparing and talking about being dog moms, cat moms, in having two plants and not even being able to take care of them. I think they're talking about this because we have a very profound self-interest in our culture. Plants make us feel nice. Dogs, cats, they make us feel good. I don't know how a cat makes anyone feel good. I don't know how a dog makes anyone feel good. So I'm going to stick with the plant here, okay? Because the plants do make me feel good. I'm not a pet person. I always get flack when I say I'm not a pet person. Like, I have really upset some people. Anyways, I'm going to come back to the plants before I get myself in trouble here. So plants make you feel nice. But babies make you be nice. There's a difference there. A plant makes you feel great. You can water it. You get, you know, delight out of it. It's not so delightful when it dies on you. Yeah, my basil plant, beautiful, full, growing. It was a huge basil plant. I thought it was going to be perfect in the window. Two windows hitting it. But, you know, still the cold here in the Midwest. Killed it. I'm very sad about this. So sometimes plants can make us feel lousy, too. We mourn their death, right? A different type of death. But babies are different. They don't just make you feel nice. They make you be nice. They change who you are. Yet for some reason, because we feel good when we have a dog, we feel good when we have a plant. People talk about being dog moms, cat moms, plant ladies, you name it. And they almost equate it as if that's better than, or that's what they want, and that's what birth control allowed them to be, or that's what they'd rather have. And even if it's a joke, an odd joke, the reality is that as we make jokes, it says a lot about what we think. Babies transform us. And this is where I came back to this idea that birth control, one of the greatest problems when it comes to marriage, is that it's thwarting motherhood and fatherhood. It's preventing it from starting, developing, growing, and being fostered. Part of being made in God's image and likeness is that we're made to be a gift of self. Gaudium et Spes, one of a beautiful document from Vatican II, if you read it, talks about how we're made in the image and likeness of God. And it says, this likeness reveals that man, who is the only creature on earth which God willed for itself, cannot fully find himself except through a sincere gift of self. In other words, God created us simply for the sake of loving us into existence and creating us. He didn't have to create us. He created us for the sake of ourselves. And what this statement says is that we cannot discover who we are. We cannot discover true, authentic joy, human flourishment, if we don't become a gift. When we become a gift, we will discover ourselves. And this is part of why marriage with contraception, it thwarts motherhood, it thwarts fatherhood, it thwarts the very meaning of who we are as human beings. You see, marriage is ordered toward children. But the thing is that kids order us to others. Kids order us to God, to sacrificial love, to charity. That is the life of God, the love of God within us. The hashtag thanks birth control is only full of emptiness, immaturity, self-indulgence, isolation. But the cross itself reveals the image of God to us. There's a reason at the beginning of time, Genesis chapter 2, verse 24, God says, be fruitful and multiply. Because this allows not just for a physical complementarity, but a full, fruitful, new life being brought forth in a child, but in the mother and father themselves. And this is what birth control is taking away. We'll be right back here on Trending to talk about theology of the body within the context of marriage.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Have you ever heard of theology of the body? If you haven't, it's okay, especially when Catholics sometimes throw out their T-O-B, T-O-B, T-O-B. I'm like, a lot of people don't know what we're talking about. It's like inside shop talk in the Catholic world. Theology of the body, you may have heard of it for teenagers, for young adults, for people who are single. But have you ever thought about it for your marriage? Do you really understand what theology of the body is? There's this thick book. I'm dropping it here next to me. It's a big one. And it is the compilation of St. John Paul II's Wednesday audiences. For a number of years, he would, on Wednesday, give a Wednesday audience. And the compilation of all of these are known as theology of the body. They're a form of catechesis that he delivered for quite a while, talking about the anthropology and theology of the human person. And he dives into and unpacks everything from the intimacy of married persons to the creation of Adam and Eve is male and female, to the suffering of Christ and its meaning for us, and the significance in our bodies as male and female, the temptations that we experience. It's an incredible catechesis. People like to refer to it and reduce it to almost a sexual theology, but that's not, it really is our human anthropology and theology. It's a summation of all of the great tradition of philosophy and theology together in all of these areas, looking at who the human person is. And so this book is phenomenal. If you've never actually read, if you've only ever read, you know, this person or that person on their commentary on theology of the body, you're missing out. I really want to encourage you to read, and they're short Wednesday audiences. You can read them online. You can read the full book. They're short. You can maybe read one in 5 minutes or a bunch of them all together. And he continues to build, so you can start at the beginning and build and build. It's something neat that you could do in your marriage. So St. John Paul II has this theology of the body. Many people reduce it to a abstinence or really chastity teaching. And I actually want to touch on that briefly, because I think at the heart of theology of the body, in very many ways, is the idea of chastity. And we have to remember, what's the difference, and this is important for our marriages to ponder this. What is the difference between abstinence and chastity? Have you ever thought about that? Abstinence is simply this idea of saying no, you just don't do it. But chastity is actually a yes. It's a virtue. It's a yes to the fullness of your vocation. It's a yes to being faithful to your vocation and your state in life. So if you're married, you're exclusively engaging in and sharing in intimate relationships only with your spouse. No extramarital affairs, things such as signing up for Ashley Madison. Remember the Ashley Madison hacks we had some years ago? When all of the lists of emails of people who had been on this extramarital affair website came out, oof, a lot of big names. A lot of names, families finding out. So no extramarital affairs, no pornography, not watching movies or shows that have people in intimate acts together. It's a violation of chastity. And chastity can be lived out as a priest who has taken vows of celibacy. Chastity is this integrated sense of recognizing our sexuality, recognizing the purpose of our state in life, and being faithful to that state in life. Same thing if you're single. Remember, for years, people go on and on, you know, about how challenging, you know, chastity is and so forth. And, you know, it doesn't matter how much you love someone. If you're not married, you can't do it. Why? Because you're not being faithful to your vocation. You're a contradiction within yourself to who you are in your state in life. But coming back to this idea of marriage, St. John Paul II's theology of the body touches on this whole idea of chastity. But it touches more so in a bigger picture on theology and anthropology. And at the heart of it, even as it's talking in a lot of areas about male and female and in intimacy, it's talking about our identity as human beings, that we have a purpose. We're called to live a purpose-filled life. And St. John Paul II proposes some ideas talking about the original state of Adam and Eve in the garden. And so for just a moment, we need to turn back the pages and ponder Genesis chapters 1 and 2 to understand these original states in the garden. This idea of original solitude, original justice, original unity, and original nakedness. All of this is very important. Original solitude is understanding that when Adam was alone in the garden, as I mentioned a little earlier on during the show when we were talking about birth control, he recognized that he was alone. And God said it was not good that he should be alone. That solitude, although rich in this development, in this relationship with God, as he's looking at all the rest of creation, he's seen this complementarity. He's seen this ability to reproduce. And he's seen also a difference between himself and the animals. And that solitude reveals to him that he's created for love, but he doesn't fully understand this until Eve is created. He has this moment. Ah, finally, bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh. He sees, I am made for you. You are made for me. And remember, the original state in the garden is they were naked. And it was physically, the complementarity was like a key in a lock. The understanding of how the body worked was clear. Nothing had to be misunderstood. There's no political ideology or agenda. Part of the reason why this solitude helped Adam to understand his purpose in life in the creation of Eve, part of this was all allowed to take place, this, because there was original state of justice in the garden. That is, this was prior to the fall of Adam and Eve. The relationship between Adam and Eve was so pure, so clear, so purposeful, because their relationship with God was right. When your relationship with God is right, when you've got that vertical relationship right, your horizontal relationships will be what they are meant to be. On your part, at least, right? When we're right with God, we will be right with others. This is a state of original justice. And this is part of what allows us to understand what's known as original unity, this unity between Adam and Eve. There wasn't this discord. There was communication, collaboration, cooperation, all of it without difficulty because they were right with God. These were part of the original states of Adam and Eve in the garden. And it was a natural orientation to the purpose of marriage and having children. You see, if we understand Adam and Eve in the garden, the creation as Adam, as man, and as Eve, as woman, we understand, as St. John Paul II talks about in his Theology of the Body, about two different incarnations, the incarnation of man and the incarnation of woman, and how both are in God's image and likeness. This is all significant for marriage because, stay with me here, listen. St. John Paul II, when talking about man and woman, he says the two reveal two complementary ways of being conscious of the meaning of the body. That is, you value the difference, the differences of the body. We love what is other in the body. We find out how the two together make the image of God. You see, what he's talking about here is that there are two ways, one is male, one is female, of being conscious of the meaning of the body, of the purpose and the image and likeness of God that we're created in. You see, when we see this value, when we have this understanding of our spouse within the context of marriage, when I understand my husband as different from me, as a man, not a woman, when we value these differences, when we remind ourselves that the reason I loved you, honey, the reason I married you was because you were someone other than me. I didn't marry myself. I wouldn't have been interested in marrying myself. I married what was other. That is part of what we love about the person that we marry. But for some reason, when we get a little ways into marriage, we try to make them just like us. We want to conform our spouse to our image and to our likeness, rather than remembering that each of us are two ways of being conscious of the meaning of the body, of being made in God's image and likeness. The Trinity, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, reveals something very profound about who God is. That there's an act of sacrificial love. We talk about this, how Jesus Christ on the cross offered himself totally to the Father for all of us. It was an act of love, an act of sacrifice to the Father to atone. It was a sacrifice for us, but a sacrifice to the Father. And that love of the Son for the Father and the Father of the Son, you'll hear in Catholic theology, spirates the Holy Spirit. In other words, what it's talking about is that the family is the Trinity. The truest form of understanding family is this perfection of love. And it's, remember, God is asexual. That is, God has no sex. Yes, incarnate Jesus Christ, we could talk about, yes, is a man. But God himself is not a sexual being. And it's important we understand that. So when we talk about Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, the Trinity is a family, what does that reveal to us about our families? We are made to be a gift of selves. We are meant to show this same familial, perfected, sacrificial love as the Trinity. Now, coming back to femininity and masculinity, as we unpack this understanding of being created in God's image and likeness and look at it within the context of marriage, we can turn to St. John Paul II's words as he continues in Theology of the Body, because we're talking today about Theology of the Body for marriage. St. John Paul II says, femininity in some way finds itself before masculinity, while masculinity confirms itself through femininity. I think this is a very profound statement, that femininity discovers itself before masculinity, and masculinity confirms itself through femininity. That is, as women, we discover ourselves before the men we are around in our lives. And for men, they are confirmed in their masculinity through exposure to femininity. This is why it's so important that we pray that as women, we are feminine women, that we are good at being mothers, wives, sisters, brides. The same for men in their various roles. Because when we are the woman that we were created to be, when we are the man that we were created to be, we help affirm other people in their masculinity and in their femininity. This is part of why we're having this crisis of the whole LGBTQ movement. There's a confusion. There's a lack of affirmation, confirmation, and discovery of who we are as male and female. You see, we discover ourselves when we love enough to discover the other. We discover ourselves when we love enough to discover the other. Especially our spouses in marriage. Marriage is a vocation on the path to heaven. We can be sanctified through our marriages. Do we allow our spouse to be other, and do we love them for that otherness? Listen to that. It's so important. I'll keep saying it because I was really pondering as I was thinking about this earlier today and the quotes from St. John Paul II. I thought, you know what? We do. We discover ourselves when we love enough to discover the other. That's what John Paul II is saying in that quote I just read you. Femininity in some way finds itself before masculinity, while masculinity confirms itself through femininity. Men, are you making it so that your presence, your interaction with the women in your lives helps them to discover themselves or tear themselves down and objectify themselves? Women, are we confirming, are we affirming the men in our lives to help them to develop in who they are called and created to be? St. John Paul II says that male and female shows two complementary dimensions of self-knowledge and self-determination. Two complementary dimensions of self-knowledge and self-determination. That as a woman, you have a different type of self-knowledge than a man does as a man. A man has a different type of self-determination than a woman does. St. John Paul II then goes on to say, there are two complementary ways of being conscious of the meaning of the body. This is how different we are as male and female. You see, being made, created, male or female, our biology, our physiology, that so-called, what our culture likes to say so crassly, that check between the legs. I can't believe we're even hearing this as a culture. That is not an accident. That is a fundamental part of who you are. Being male or female is a fundamental part of your existence. Being male or female, that biological representation, that biological reality, that physiology impacts all the way to the depth of your soul, to the dimension of self-knowledge, as St. John Paul II says, to the dimension of self-determination, to the very meaning and purpose of your body. And this is discovered in a particular way within the context of marriage. marriage is that place to discover and grow with one another. And to discover another who is other than ourselves. Embracing the otherness. I've even seen this in new ways, being new parents with my husband. Seeing his fatherhood, seeing his attitudes that are different from mine with regard to how our baby girl eats and doesn't eat and whines for the cheese that she loves or the apples that she wants rather than eating her chicken or beef or avocado. I'm Californian. Baby's gotta eat avocado, right? You're even seeing the way he plays with her is totally different, or his attitude and how he handles changing the diapers. We could criticize and critique. We could say, well, no, do it this way. And yes, there are moments for that that are appropriate and important. But sometimes we just have to admire, wow, look at the differences. Look at the differences in gifts, the differences in interests. Even just seeing, not related to the baby, seeing the difference in our spouses of their interests. Even, I think this is an interesting one. We should talk about this one day. The differences between what keeps a man up at night versus what keeps a woman up at night. And those things that we ponder. Is these are all parts of the differentness and otherness. And how we have to discover the other and appreciate the complementarity. You see, marriage teaches the value of the human person. Marriage teaches that there is another person. In good times and in bad, boy, are these times to discover the other person. And let go of ourselves, in sickness and in health, for richer or poorer. Marriage teaches the value of who we are as human beings. It teaches us to love. And this is the depth of St. John Paul II's theology of the body, barely scratching the surface when it comes to our marriages. It's not just for people who are dating. It's not just for young adults. It's not just talking about abstinence or chastity, although that's important and those are parts of marriage. It's about the whole dimension of who you are, your human anthropology, and where you're created to be, and how you will get there. You're listening to Trending with Timory here on Relevant Radio. I'm going to come back because I think this really does tie in this whole culture of living together, moving in together. I know a lot of young adults moved in with their parents more than ever in many years during COVID. But we're actually seeing, yet again, this return to moving back in together or contemplating the idea. What can we say from psychology to theology to the current culture? I'll be back with you in just a little bit, whether you have a loved one who's pondering this or maybe you yourself have been there. I'd love to hear from you. Maybe you tried it out and it didn't work. The number's 1-888-914-9149.
You can listen to more of Trending with Timory via the Relevant Radio app or at relevantradio.com/trending.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
We've heard the trend for the last 10, 15 years that more and more people are living together instead of getting married or before marriage, if they ever even get married. It's another one I didn't even add to my list today. You know, if you move in together, do you know that your likelihood that you'll ever get married intensely decreases, along with increasing your likelihood to divorce? A lot of people moving in together don't know that. It's something to mention. It's not theology talking, although theology does inform and agree with all of this. Those are basic social sciences and studies coming out. Now, 2020 and 2021 have looked a little different. We've actually seen a massive increase in the number of young adults and millennials as well moving in with their parents. Moving in, living with their parents during everything that's happened with uncertainty of COVID. However, what we're seeing is yet again this return to living together. And many people did choose to live together due to the uncertainty and the trends of the world. Now, 2020, 2021 attitudes, very radically differently from almost 100 years ago now. If we were to compare the World War II generation to people today, remember, too being in the 30s and 40s, and we're 2021. Can you believe it's almost 2022? I can't. I'm still processing that. Here's the reality. Moving in together, the attitude is one of the main and leading attitudes of the culture today. Seems more compatible in times of uncertainty, right? That's the attitude. Yet, at a time of tremendous uncertainty and danger as well, the World War II generation, they, instead of looking to this uncertainty and shacking up together, I'm reminded by my friends when I say shacking up, they can't stand it. It sounds so, quote, old-fashioned. So just so you know, don't say shacking up if you're talking to your kid about not moving in together. It's a trigger word. Trust me, I've seen it. My friends get really mad at me, and I'm not even their mom. Okay, so the World War II generation also faced uncertainty, fear, death, so many things that many ways we could say we're facing today. The World War II generation, in the face of that, they got married. They had kids. They chose responsibility, risk, uncertainty, challenge, commitment, commitment for life, preservation for the sake of others, not just for their own self-interest. Versus our 2020 attitude, those who are choosing to move in together in times of uncertainty. And it's important we understand this perspective, because maybe this is your kid. Maybe this is a friend of yours. That act of moving in is a choice that's temporary. It's supposedly, in their minds, reduced risk. Testing the waters provides an exit strategy. It's a means of self-survival and absolute self-preservation, but not for the sake of anyone else. It's interesting, the United States Census Bureau released stats in 2018 looking at an American family and living arrangement study, and it showed that in those at that time age 18 to 24, almost 10% of that age group were living together prior to marriage, not getting married at all. More people in the age 18 to 24 gap age range were unmarried and living together than were those who had gotten married. Now, we know marriage is delayed longer and longer, but there are a lot of people who are in serious relationships, and more people are in serious relationships choosing to get married or choosing to live together than they were to get married. Versus if you were to look back to the World War II generation, it was almost unthinkable to move in together. Go to 1968 even. It was rare even back in 1968 for people to move in together. So what changed? Oh, and I forgot to mention, Patrick, you're right. One of the reasons that a lot of people try to claim that they move in together is that it's cheaper. I still don't understand how that one works. This is the one that we're going to have a whole show on that. We'll break that one down one day. It's not. So what's changed between World War II, 2020, or even 1968? Well, the start of this show gives you just a glimpse of what's changed. Our attitudes about sexuality. Sex without the same consequences. Still consequences, but not the same consequences. We now have birth control, the fail-safe of birth control being abortion, and no-fault divorce. What we think about sex, the context of sex, has completely changed in the last 90 years, in the last 50 years. The question at hand is, what do you believe marriage is for? What do we believe marriage is for as a culture? What I want, what I enjoy. It's funny, I was just thinking of a few movies or things from, you know, my childhood, my teen years that came out. I think about movies such as Amanda Bynes' What a Girl Wants, the show Sex and the City that's being rebooted this coming week, movies like The Devil Wears Prada, and how all of them are really focused in on me. What do I want? What do I enjoy? Some of which can be great movies, but not necessarily teaching us anything about human life, human flourishment, human intimacy, which we were talking about just a little bit ago in Theology of the Body. And I think of, you know, movies totally different from the cultural narrative, and I think it's part of the reason why a movie such like as this did so well. I think of the movie Raising Helen with Kate Hudson. That story, yes, still a chick flick. Sorry, gentlemen, if you don't know it. The story about a woman whose sister dies and she inherits her three kids. And she goes from living a radically selfish life to a life of raising these three children whom she absolutely adores and radically change her life. She starts living for the other rather than for herself. You see, this is the importance of turning to the Catholic approach of looking at what marriage is. That it's for the other, for it's the good of the spouses, for the, you know, we hear the words over and over again in the church, the procreation and education of children. So how do we rediscover why living together is for marriage, about marriage? Well, first, it helps us to value ourselves and others when we wait till marriage to move in together. It helps us, second, to see sex has a purpose. And that it always has consequences, biologically and interpersonally. But we've lost the different types of consequences or turned to different types of consequences with birth control, abortion, and no-fault divorce. We have to turn back to fostering healthy relationships, strong relationships, faithful relationships. We have to stop turning to the secular culture to determine all of these studies and telling people what's wrong if you move in together and how to thwart future marriages. And we need to tell the story ourselves about good marriages that are growing and flourishing because of we've chosen to follow the way the church prescribes for marriage. This is Tim Ray from Trending with Tim Ray. We are so close to the Advent season, and I'm going to talk about some things that we need to do practically to prepare our home, with everything from ordering the Advent wreath and Advent candles, maybe choosing a book or whatever we might do to prepare for Christ's coming at Advent, to engage in those penances during this Advent season. Join me daily at 6 p.m. Central on Relevant Radio or the Relevant Radio app.